And she has gone ahead of us, all the rest of us, and quite what's the word I want? Oh, yes, she was not young, but her decline was sudden, as can happen. This is a teaching for all of us, because we rarely have the vivid opportunity to reflect death and how it sits with us all the days of our lives. It's not a contemplation that our culture supports. We don't want to think about this. The culture doesn't want us to talk about this. But in Theravada Buddhism, the contemplation of death is one of the four protective reflections. The other three being the contemplation of the Buddha, the practice of loving kindness, and the contemplation of the nature of the body, the unsavory nature of the body. And each of these contemplations contradicts and is an antidote to a particular unwholesome state. So, metta is the antidote to ill will. The contemplation of the body and the nature of the body is the antidote to greed. Reflecting about the Buddha is the antidote to doubt. It causes faith to arise. And contemplating that radical impermanence that is death is the antidote to complacency. It gives us urgency. But we have to let it in. And I chuckle because how many of us really do this? I can speak for myself. Most days, not. I have a plan that goes out into the future, and yeah, okay, I'm going to die someday. Sometimes, though, something happens and we realize, oh, yeah. In the teaching of dependent origination, there's birth, and birth ultimately conditions death, rebirth. And we go around and around and around like this, kind of lost and enchanted by life. Fortunately for all of us, we see things more deeply than when many people in this world. We realize there's more to life than getting, having, being, the endless chasing of pleasure and youth. And really think about that. I mean, it's so interesting how many people in life, I know a number of people who've had plastic surgery. And many people, I don't know anybody personally, but I know it's quite common for people to have Botox injected in their faces so that they don't look their age. All this goes along with not wanting to think about aging, not wanting to think about where this is all going. And it's not morbid, actually, to reflect about death. Death for the Buddha, contemplating a corpse for the first time, was a heavenly messenger for him that caused him to really change the way he was living and pursue a deepening practice. So we can contemplate death as a practice, a specific practice. And what this does, if we do it with metta and we do it with the sensitivity that is alive to our limits. So you don't want to push yourself into a corner of being kind of overwhelmed by this. But to the extent that we can do a practice like this with balance, it can lead it to a really deep understanding of impermanence so that the mind lets go of whatever it clings to. And this, of course, is the point of the practice, the freedom that comes when we're not hanging on to the world being a certain way. This is what brings contentment, ease, and ultimately liberation of mind. There's a beautiful story from the time of the Buddha where the Buddha had gone to a place called Alavi and had offered a teaching. And in the audience that day, there was a young woman. She was, a teenager. She was the daughter of a weaver. And the Buddha spoke about contemplating death. And she thought, if the Buddha says this is useful, maybe I'll take this up. So every day, she really consciously inclined to the understanding of this. And time went by, a year went by, and the Buddha came back to on purpose, actually, because with his omniscient vision, he saw that through this contemplation, her mind and heart had ripened. And so he came and he sat, and everybody gathered because the word got out, oh, the Buddha's here, let's go listen to what he has to say. But he wouldn't speak until she was present. And she knew he was coming, and so, she really wanted to go listen to his teaching, but had to stay back at home to do something for her father. And when she was finished, finally she came and sat down. And when she was present, the Buddha addressed her in a series of really interesting questions. The first thing he asked is, where have you come from? And she said, I don't know. And then the Buddha said, where are you going? And she said, I don't know. And then he said, do you know? And she says, I don't know. And then he said, don't you know? And she says, oh, I know. And this series of what to everybody else seems like nonsense riddles. There was a, ripple through the audiences. How could she be so disrespectful? This is the Buddha. What's she talking about? And the Buddha caught this, of course. And He addressed everybody and said, "Can I ask a few more things?" And he said, and so he addressed the weaver's daughter and he said, "When I asked you, where did you come from? Why did you say, 'I don't know'?" And she said, "Well, of course, everybody knows, and I know I've come from my father's workshop." But the meaning of your question, it was, where did you come from before you were reborn here? And I don't know that. And then again, he asked, "Well, what about when I asked, where are you going?" And she says, "Likewise, I don't know what is happening, what is coming for me in the next life." And then he asked, "Do you know?" And she says, "I don't know." And what the Buddha said, "Well, what did you mean?" And she says, "Well, I don't know when I'll die, whether it's in the morning or at night or today or tomorrow or, 50 years from now." And then when he said, "Don't you know?" And she said, "I know." And he asked her to explain that. And she said, "Well, she says, I know I'll die. It's inevitable." And so the Buddha looked around at the audience and said, "All of you didn't understand what I was asking and didn't understand what she was answering. But this young woman has deeply understood my teachings." And as he was speaking, it said that she attained enlightenment, first stage at least. But these four questions, they were the vehicle of a deep letting go. We all think, "Oh yeah, I'll be here tomorrow." We don't know. We really don't know. I mean, the chances are it's likely we will be. But don't know. None of us wakes up in the morning thinking, "Oh, okay, I'm going to die today." Well, a few people actually do if they have a terminal illness and know that, they've gone through the process and are going to undergo euthanasia, they know, okay, today will be the day I die. Or perhaps, very sadly, somebody who wants to commit suicide. But most of us just bumbling through our lives. No. Can't know. But we can be very awake to the fact that this body and this life hangs by a thread. In a moment, And we don't know the day or time that that will happen. We don't know where we'll go next, just as we don't know where we've come from. But that understanding, when it's held with kindness, can really drop us into the bigger picture. There's a one of the Jataka tales, the tales of the Buddha's previous lives. Is a beautiful story about two acrobats, and they were very close. And the way the story goes is they had been reborn together again and again and again. And so there's a line in the story, and they fell from one lifetime into another. And you get this sense of this journey we're on is so much bigger than this small life we're living now, or big life we're living now, but this limited space and time of this present moment. We don't know what's behind us or how many lives we've lived to get here. We don't know how many we have ahead of us. And what are we going to do with that? So when somebody precious around us dies, it can be a shock. Because to the extent that we've been blind to all of this, it wakes us up into that radical impermanence of this place and time. And it gives us an opportunity to really consciously contemplate, what am I going to do? And this needs to be held with kindness because this is a challenging, very confronting piece of information. Yes, we will all die is something we can say offhandedly when we don't really let it in. But when we really let it in, it can be, depending on our habits and personality and the way our mind works with these kinds of things, it can be overwhelming. So metta is essential. Given the radical impermanence of things, may I be safe and protected. May I be at ease with all of this. And then that patient inclination to the wisdom of understanding can cause us to reflect about how am I using my time? There's one of the frequent things that we as monastic reflect on. There's a series of reflections, and one of them is the days and nights are relentlessly passing. How well am I using my time? And so when we're confronted with death, we look around and go, wow, days and nights are relentlessly passing. How well am I using my time? And so it's very useful to wake up to this, to connect again and again and again to this. When you're visiting the Shwedagon Pagoda, or really any pagoda, big pagoda in Burma, as you go up the steps to the platform of the pagoda, the stairways are lined with shops. And some of these shops, you can buy these little laminated pictures of the Buddha. Some of them are quite wild. You turn them over, and there's a particular, and there are often things on the back that are written reflections that people do. But one of the things that you can sometimes see on the back of these little images of the Buddha is a little table with numbers on it. So it's kind of very small print, lots of little cells in that table and numbers. And what it is on one axis of the table, there's how old you are, and the other axis is how many days you have left. So, if you live to be a certain age, you can, it's like, oh, I only have if I live to be 75, I only have this many days left. Days and nights are relentlessly passing. How well am I using my time? There is a real benefit to this, and please be careful not to judge yourself for wasting time. We all do that to a certain extent. And sometimes in some, some periods of our life, we need to just be quiet and not do so much or do anything. We need to rest. We need to take care of ourselves. So it's not about endlessly doing. But even if we're not doing anything, how are we inclining the mind? This is that question that this reflection brings up. Now what? Now what? I know this. Now what? How are we inclining? Are we inclining to greed, aversion, delusion? Or non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion? To letting go, to metta, to wisdom. And however we incline the mind in that way is fine. It doesn't have to be dramatic or big. And so this reflection can happen in the smallest of ways. We have a choice of what to do in a moment. And we feel the impulse to do something kind of, eh, perhaps entertaining, but waste of time. Maybe scrolling through our phone or just getting lost in Netflix or YouTube or social media. Days and nights relentlessly passing. So finding a way to relax that's onward leading. Maybe going for a walk, sitting with a cup of tea, being mindful and kind. The beauty of the practice is that it happens not only on our cushion, but in all the moments of our lives. And this practice of remembering that, oh yeah, the days and nights are relentlessly passing, I too will pass away, is something we can do anywhere, anytime. Just remembering that. So the caution of don't judge yourself is important, taking that into consideration. And then the other caution is know your limits. As I mentioned just a while ago, not everybody is comfortable with this. Well, it is uncomfortable, actually, when we really begin to let it. But if your mind tends to obsess or really lock onto the negative. Get overwhelmed by things. Take this up gently and understand that just reflecting a little bit is fine. You don't have to do it every moment of the day. And if you feel overwhelmed or depressed or find the heart getting heavy because of this, incline to metta instead. Because as we begin to open to this, it is quite amazingly confronting. I had the opportunity a long, long time ago now to go to Varanasi, which is one of the most remarkable places on the planet, where there's life and death and joy and grief, and it's a beautiful ancient city. And I would go in the morning to the Burning Ghats just to contemplate what was going on there. And people, families would come down these tiny ancient lanes with the bodies of a loved one to be cremated on the banks of the Ganga. And you can sit and watch families light fires and watch the fires burn. And no, the first day I did this, it was interesting. The second day, a little harder. Third day, it was quite painful, actually. It was like, this is actually really intense. The fourth day, I could hardly stand it and I didn't go back. So, know your limits. Don't push yourself to let this in too quickly. But remember, always remember where this goes. And using our life with beauty, inclining always to the beauty of the Dhamma, wisdom, and compassion. One of the things that this opens up, in addition to the wisdom of letting go, is the beauty of compassion. Because we know we will all pass away. And we see people rushing through their lives, going down the street, and just blind to that. And it really can awaken a kind of compassion. Death will come for all of us. We're so happy when a baby is born. But this is the causal condition for sorrow on the other end. That child will age, lose their youth and their health, have to deal with that huge letting go of aging and illness. When we can no longer do what we once did without thinking. And then eventually pass away again. It's like we all launch our little boats into the water joyfully, going for the other shore, and one by one the boats sink. It's like, oh, we're never going to make it back. Well, and then, that's not a very good metaphor because we get reborn again. But the compassion that this opens up is profound. So first be compassionate towards yourself for struggling with this. And then when you see other people, remember, always remember, they too are facing the same thing you are facing. This profound, constant gain and loss. It's the one of the worldly winds. We gain a life, we lose a life. And what are we going to do in the face of that? This is always the question this comes back to. So the compassion that can manifest so many ways. We have this body. Maybe some part of this body can be useful for somebody. It can be an organ donor. Give somebody else life. Maybe we can just be a little kinder to ourselves and each other when faced with the enormity of anicca change. And it brings us again and again and again to practice. Because the practice is what wakes us up. It gives us safety and protection and frees us from these rounds of rebirth, ultimately. This is a profound refuge. So always taking refuge. Being alive comes with eventually not. No one on this planet escapes that. It's a beautiful reflection, actually, and a powerful one. And so, Heidi and Lean today, going to Hema's funeral, went to a Dhamma teaching. And sadness and gratitude. So, thank you for your kind attention, everybody. We have some time. And I wonder, always wonder when I speak of this, which is actually not.